Back on Downtown on this Thursday afternoon, time for us to talk some Red Sox. And to do that, we turn to our friend Sean McAdam of Mass Live. Sean, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Rich, and may I compliment you for use of one of the better Motown singles of all time there in the background.
Oh, Junior Walker, the All-Star, is one of my all-time favorites right there. Love it. I needed something that would rise to the level of the Red Sox taking care of business at the Trop. What's going on with this team?
Yeah, a little surprising given the history, and even just a week ago, Tampa came into Fenway and took 3 out of 4 and continued their domination of the Red Sox. Over the last few seasons, that's been nothing new, and when the Red Sox dropped 2 out of 3 in St. Louis and headed for their own personal shop of horrors there in St. Pete, it was hard to feel optimistic about how the next three games were going to unfold. And yet, you know, you could make the case, I guess, Rich, that the three games the Red Sox played there were among the best they've played in the season so far through the first 2 months. Good starting pitching each night, some athleticism and speed on the bases, including a double steal with a steal of home on the part of Jaron Duran, some good base running, some clutch hitting, some power, a little bit of everything. And it just goes to show that it takes a pretty complete game to go into the Rays' backyard and beat them at their own game. But the Red Sox did that, earning a sweep for the first time since 2019.
And the pitching, I mean, it's no longer a small sample size. We're almost a third of the way through the season, and they continue to get very good pitching, especially from their starters. But, of course, bad news this week for another pitcher, Garrett Whitlock. How long can they keep this going when they're just trying to patch things together?
Yeah, I mean, every time you're sort of left with the question of, you know, what's next and how do they overcome this one? It started in March with Giolito going down, and then you had the parade of guys going to the IL in April with Pavetta, then Bayo, and then Whitlock. Whitlock seems to be coming back from the oblique strain, has a pretty good outing at AAA, has a rehab appearance. It's thought that he was going to pitch in St. Pete in one of those games, but the day after he felt the elbow issue, and some tests reveal at least a slight tear in that UCL. He's going to get a second opinion, I think, early next week. But you can't feel good about this. Whenever they talk about even a slight tear of the UCL, that usually means some sort of surgery, and now it's a matter of is it the full Tommy John procedure, or can they get away with the internal brace procedure that Giolito had? Either way, we'll have seen the last of Whitlock this season. You hope it's not Tommy John, because that would kind of take him up toward the end of next year, kind of August-September timetable return, whereas an internal brace might have him ready in about a year, maybe next April or May. But in any event, I don't think we're going to see him again this season. And as I said, each subsequent injury is the, you know, threatens to be the straw that breaks the camel's back here. They've withstood so much in terms of loss, manpower loss, and injury, and you wonder, is the next one going to be the one that breaks them?
Is there any help in the organization somewhere?
Well, I mean, you know, they've only gotten 4 starts out of Whitlock this year between the oblique and the more recent diagnosis. So you could argue that they've done fairly well without him, except for, you know, 25 or so innings. The problem is that how likely is it that the remaining healthy pitchers continue to be that way?
Right.
That is, no further setbacks, no more injuries. Because the depth options are starting to run thin. Right now, if you look at AAA, you know, you have Josh Winkowski, who they're trying to stretch out and see if he can help them as a starter. You have Richard Fitz, one of the guys they got in the deal that sent Alex Verdugo to the Yankees. He's pitched relatively well at AAA, but has never pitched in the big leagues. And then, you know, then you start looking at options like Chase Anderson as the long guy and mop-up guy kind of in the bullpen, but not anybody that is, instilled much confidence in the Red Sox this year. So I would say it's Winkowski and Fitz as potential depth options, but there are question marks associated with both of them.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. The bullpen has been pretty solid as well. Kenley Jansen continues to rack up saves and climb on that all-time list. What's his future look like if this team stays in this position they're in right now, just half a game out of a wild card spot? Does that somehow make it more likely that they hang on to him at least until the trade deadline or even till the end of the season?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that they're going to move anybody. We know it's pretty rare to see a significant baseball trade before we get to July. Usually teams are still trying to figure out what they have on hand. They don't want to wave the white flag on the rest of the season at Memorial Day or even in June. They're focused on getting ready for the draft, which has been pushed back now to the All-Star break the last few years. So all of those factors work against making a deal before that as to what their philosophy is going to be as they get into late July. Well, tell me where they are in 7 weeks' time, and I'll have a better answer for you. It's worth remembering that in each of the last two seasons, they were at least on the periphery of the wild card race in both 22 and 23 and kind of played it halfway both times. They did a little bit of selling and a little bit of buying, but not anything dramatic. And it'll be interesting to see if that changes at all. If, let's roll the tape and see that they're two games out of a wild card and a few games over 500 in July. Do they have a different response this year than they do in the previous two? Do they take a more definitive path, either buying or selling? I think it's impossible to make that determination right now.
You mentioned Jarren Duran. He has been so much fun to watch lately. Every night it seems he does something special, whether it's the steal of home, a good defensive play, or hitting triples like nobody's business. I don't remember the last time we had somebody on a pace to get more than 20 triples in a season.
Yeah, you'd have to, I recall the Jim Rice season of 78. Mm. Where he had 15 triples, which is pretty remarkable given that Rice was not the fastest guy. You usually associate triples with speed players, and Rice was not that. But he was pretty adept at hitting balls into the triangle at Fenway and deep parts of the ballpark on the road. It seems a given that Duran is going to top that number and have the most triples for a Red Sox player in almost 50 years. But, it's part of how he has elevated his game across every aspect this year. He's much better defensively in center field. He was a decidedly sub-average defender in center last year, even if he played fairly well in left, and you can hide him at Fenway. But when they moved him to center, there was a big drop-off in his play. This year, he's among the league leaders in defensive runs saved among all outfielders. He's worked hard at becoming a better outfielder. His jumps are better. He's throwing the ball better. So defensively, he's taken a huge step forward. And then offensively, even though he's been a little streaky, he's just a dynamic presence at the top of that lineup, whether it's, getting a walk and knowing that he's always a threat to steal with a great success rate in terms of his stolen base attempts. He can drive the ball to the gap. And, anytime he's hitting the ball on the ground or on a line into the outfield, there's always a chance for doubles for him because he runs hard out of the box and sort of forces the hand of the opposition. And whether that's a bad throw or a relay coming off or forcing an error, they haven't had anybody operating out of the top spot for a while who can really do those kind of things. And it just looks like he's gaining confidence and just elevated his game in every way as a base runner, as a hitter, and as a defender.
It didn't get a lot of attention because of the focus on all the young outfielders, but when when Rob Refsnyder re-signed, nobody batted an eye. But my goodness, he's such a good, solid, professional role player out there who kills left-handers and is pretty darn good defensively when he gets the opportunity.
Yeah, last year was kind of a disappointment for him. You know, he had had a terrific season for the Red Sox back in 2022, and then for whatever reason had a drop off last year. I mean, he went from a guy who had an 881 OPS in 2022 to just 682 last year, and you know, I think there's some questions about whether he was going to remain with the team. He had an affordable guarantee for 2024 of like $1.75 million. They easily could have walked away from that and not ate all that much money in spring training. And I'm sure they're glad they didn't, because he's hit both lefties and righties this year, as you would have to get a 956 OPS. But he's back to being that lefty killer that he was 2 years ago. He's a solid outfielder that you can kind of trust in all three outfield positions, even though he's better in the corners. But he's a nice fourth outfielder and a guy to have off the bench.
And boy, this catching tandem, the way they're playing both offensively and defensively, they're about as good as any pair in the game right now.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, it seems like both Reese McGuire and Connor Wong have taken turns getting hot and running with the job for a while. Right out of the gate, McGuire kind of grabbed everyone's attention with better at bats and taking playing time away from Wong. And then Wong caught up and now has sort of, I think, cemented that number one catcher's role again. McGuire's the guy that, you know, is kind of the number two. He plays against some righties, even though both of them sort of have reverse splits at times. But Wong has taken a big step forward offensively. He's cut his strikeout. Well, first he cut his swing down, and that in turn resulted in him cutting back on his strikeouts. There was way too much swing and miss in his game last year, but he's got a more direct approach to the ball this year with the bat path, and you're seeing more consistent contact and the ability to drive the ball. And you only, yeah, some of this is because Trevor Story and Tristan Casas are sidelined. But the fact that Alex Cora trusts him to be the number three hitter in the middle of that Red Sox lineup speaks to how much confidence they have in him offensively.
Vaughn Grissom has been struggling a lot, but it's important to remember, I think, that he really didn't have a spring training.
Yeah, and then even as spring training ended and he was taking care of his rehab stint down in the minor leagues, he got the flu. That cost him to lose 10 or 15 pounds. He really lost some strength and needed to rebuild from that. Didn't have those at-bats in spring training to fall back on. So he was kind of starting from a stationary position. And it showed, you know, for the first week or so when he was up here. That led to some additional opportunities and playing time for David Hamilton. But it looks like Grissom's had better at-bats on this road trip. And you can kind of see what it is about the Red Sox, about what the Red Sox like about him. A solid defender, even though he hasn't played a ton of second base in the pros, but he's getting more comfortable there. And then just good bat-to-ball skills and the ability to drive the ball, too.
Sean McAdam, Mass Live, with us here on Downtown. Sean, great talking with you. As always, appreciate you making time here on the off day this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, Rich. Thanks.
Thank you. Sean McAdam, talking Sox on Downtown.